The Heaven Field, a novel by I.G. Hume, read by the author. Episode 22, Storm Clouds. I never thought I would see a sight like this, Commander James muttered quietly to Aubrey Wilson. From the large observation window, the two men had a spectacular view of the enormous production plant which worked around the clock to produce suits and weapons for the field. The vast underground factories were at full stretch, desperately attempting to build a new army. I don't like it, Aubrey, whispered James morosely. Not one bit. The portly man looked up from his thoughts, settling his thick spectacles on his nose. Like it? Well, no, Colin, who would? But these are crucial times. His voice trailed off absently, as if he wasn't quite convinced himself. But isn't this just a little excessive a response to the siege? I mean, there only seems to be no more than 4 aircraft and a handful of men holding the doorway. Or do you know something I don't? James looked hard into the old man's eyes. Well, began Aubrey, somewhat guiltily, obviously we don't know just who these attackers are, or how many there may be. We need to break the siege on the doorway. It won't be easy. James continued to hold Aubrey in his stern gaze. Oh, all right, my friend, muttered Aubrey at last. But this goes no further. Understand? He looked about cautiously to make sure that nobody was within earshot. Very well, he began. The threat from these unknowns is major, but not the whole story. Do you remember those encrypted codes that Thomas Sullivan found on your lab's systems? Well, we found their source. He paused, looking away as if he couldn't face the words he was about to utter. It was the American Secret Services, he whispered at last. I don't know if you took much notice of the furore in the news about those hackers that we caught recently. It became a big diplomatic incident. Well, it turns out that we had inadvertently obtained all the data for the Americans' latest spy software. It was the Americans spying on us here at Maundsworth, cut in James incredulously. Aubrey nodded nervously. But that virus was manipulating the crash data. It would mean, why would they try and frame us for that plane crash? We're finding the virus, or variants, all over our most secret and important systems. Everywhere. Aubrey shook his head in disbelief. It now looks as if they caused the plane crash, he said, his voice leaden. James looked at him in incomprehension. You don't mean that, he stuttered. But surely not just to close us down. They wouldn't... I can't believe it. We don't understand their reasons yet. I know it doesn't make any sense, but all the evidence is there. Aubrey gazed out silently across the vast automated factories. There was a lot of confusion and fear going on, he whispered at last. It seems the Americans have now got their own arrays into production. They have claimed exclusive rights to the field, and have made their threats clear to anybody who might not agree with them. James's shoulders slumped in shock. The weight of information was too much for him to deal with. But the Americans are years off standing point technology, he gasped. We are the only ones capable. Jane Honeyman, interjected Aubrey in a cold monotone. Everything we had, she passed it on. James's head span in confusion, and he staggered down heavily onto a nearby seat. They've stolen everything, he croaked in a hoarse whisper. They can't be allowed to take over the field, muttered Aubrey. Just think of the dangers if we can't defend ourselves. We'd be impotent. Invisible armies appearing anywhere, from nowhere. It's horrifying to consider. His voice faded away. What have we done? Whispered James, his head in his hands. My God, Aubrey, what have we done? Oh, please, Saul, just listen to me. It's all right, Saul. Grace knelt beside Davison, clutching his arm, pleading for some response. He sat in his usual chair in the day room, staring out across the barren moorland beyond the high wire fences. The white snow, punctuated by black tufts of heather, melted into the pale grey sky. The low sun shone a weak golden light into Saul's dark eyes, but he didn't blink. "Please, Saul," continued Grace, her voice a hoarse, cracking whisper. "You must listen. It's important. You're not crazy. We've been back in the field. We've seen things just like you did. Oh, God, Saul, you're all right. It's all right."
Davison's eyes flickered a little, but that was his only response. Grace cursed and ran her hand through her hair. There were tears filling her eyes.
"Saul, we found buildings. We went in and we saw people, just like the ones you came across. It wasn't an illusion, Saul. You didn't make them up. They're real. We even saw another creature. Thomas called it an angel. Please, Saul, you're all right."
"An angel." The words were barely audible, and Grace didn't even make out Davison's lips move. She held her breath expectantly, hoping desperately for more. Slowly, Saul turned to face her, his eyes darting about her head. There was no recognition in his expression as his gaze slowly settled on her, but Grace's face lit up with hope.
"I see angels. And others."
The words breathed from Saul's mouth came out as unfamiliar and alien.
"I see them all the time,"
he whispered. His voice was leaden with sadness.
"It's all right. It's all right," croaked Grace,
as the tears fell down her cheeks.
"There must be some explanation, something about the field, but you're going to be fine, Saul, I swear."
"No," he muttered, starting to look around in fear.
"No, there are too many. I can't." "It's okay, Saul," sobbed Grace. "We've seen them too. You'll be all right." "No,"
he shrieked, pulling at the blanket which covered his legs.
"No."
Two nurses appeared through the doorway and ran over to where Saul was shaking in the throes of a fit.
"No,"
he screamed again at the top of his voice. "What have you been saying to him?" shouted one of the nurses to Grace, pushing her roughly out of the way as she went to hold Davison's arms down.
"It's okay, Saul," she soothed. "You're fine now. Quiet, quiet."
Grace looked up from where she had stumbled onto the floor, the distress still written starkly upon her face. Slowly Saul relaxed, his cries dying down to a low mumble.
"They're too strong,"
he whimpered, almost inaudibly, as his head slumped on one side with exhaustion. Grace staggered to her feet and stumbled out of the room, her hand held over her mouth.
"Why won't you tell us where your array is located, Alex?" asked Commander James wearily, his face lined and heavy in the harsh light.
"I told you before," muttered Alex, his hands to his head as he leant on the bare table. "It is of no consequence. Dr. Henschel destroyed it before he helped me to escape."
"So why not tell us?" demanded James in exasperation.
They had been talking round in circles for hours now. Alex had filled in most of his history, but was still reluctant to give away details of his comrades outside of the field. It seemed as if some things were too difficult to give up, and he wouldn't betray his friends.
"I've told you," sighed Alex. "What is important are the creatures."
"Now," he paused and swallowed hard.
"By now our base will have been destroyed. Their army will turn its attention here."
His voice rose steadily in agitation as he spoke.
"If you don't shut down your array here, there's a chance they will find a way through. Don't you see? That's what Henschel was trying to do. He realized they were manipulating him somehow, so they could get through to this world, but we resisted them. He destroyed the array. You've got to shut it down. They're coming for you. They..."
Two guards ran forward to restrain him as he rose to his feet in fury, pulling at his handcuffs.
"I think that's enough for today," muttered James, stabbing wearily at the tape recorder, which stopped abruptly with a loud click.
The guards manhandled Alex from the bare room, and James sat listening to the small man's protestations fade into the distance.
"So, what do you think?"
asked James at last, speaking out to the empty room. Aubrey Wilson's jovial voice cut through the silence, distorting through the speaker system.
"I see what you mean, Colin. He certainly is more talkative than the others. And you say he gave himself up to Dr. Palmer?"
James nodded slowly, idly tracing lines on the table with his finger.
"He hasn't really told us much of any use, though, has he?" muttered Aubrey absently. Shall I keep pushing him? Sighed James. It's up to you, really. I expect we'll just get more ghost stories, laughed Aubrey. You seem sincere, said James quietly, still gazing at the table. He seems crazy, if you ask me, came back Aubrey's disembodied voice.
They walked slowly across the flat rocks, the thick dark slime sucking at Thomas's heavy boots. Lazy clouds of steam rose up from the endless flats.
What is this black mud?
He asked, the stench of it catching in his throat. It is blood, replied the angel somberly, his eyes still searching across the dark horizon. It is the effluent of an eternity of struggle, seeping through the earth. There have been many great battles here. Thomas stopped in horror and gazed about him. Don't be afraid, spoke the angel sadly. There is nothing left to harm us here. Thomas followed the angel, slipping and sliding in the direction of a large, solitary rock. All about them were signs of destruction. Not a single stone he walked upon was whole. Each was shattered and held its form only until he put his weight upon it, whereupon it would crumble into dust.
For you humans, this is the realm of consequence, sighed the angel wearily. For all time until now, only a higher part of your perceptions has inhabited this place. Your hold over it is weak. Your will can only alter events here in the most extreme of conditions. Only your greatest emotions reach and are formed here. The energy shape of your thoughts is made tangible. But you have brought your entire physical selves into this world,
it whispered, the flashes of raging fires reflecting in its dark, black eyes.
Your every thought, whim, and fear impinges upon our atmosphere, and you have not the capacity to control any of them. Your emotion is a ferocious wave of energy here, and as always, your overwhelming human trait is fear. That is why you build such grotesque visions for yourselves. Our world reflects, and thus amplifies your unbridled terror. And that is why,
the angel spoke without accusation in its voice, only regret.
That is why we are without hope.
But, whispered Thomas, can't you alter events back on Earth, in the physical spectrum? Surely you can still help us.
The angel sighed and stroked the bloodless wound in its back.
Our control of events in your sphere is weak. Just as you could only interact here with extreme emotions, so too here. Great battles must be fought to alter the smallest matters of consequence in your world. In ages past, vast armies were drawn up for wars to decide the good or bad fortune in a key point of some human's fate. Countless of my kind have died to tip the balance of some seemingly trivial moment in a human life. But our forces are smashed. We hide now where we can from your fear.
But why? Why have you done all this for us? Asked Thomas.
The angel grimaced, clutching its side once again. Thomas, wide-eyed, saw the gaping wound slowly grow as the transparent skin tore away.
We do all this only for our survival, gasped the angel. Now please, please go. You burn too bright. I cannot stand the pain.
Thomas turned and fled, choking on his tears. Thomas stood unsteadily beside the angel, upon a high bluff of red rock overlooking an indescribable scene of chaos and battle. Over flat ash plains, pitted and scarred with rents belching acrid black smoke, an army of tortured forms was on the move. Gruesome creatures of every imaginable mutation poured across the plains towards a squat pyramid structure, ugly and man-made, upon which the hordes released their fury. Already the fortress showed considerable signs of damage, and as Thomas watched aghast, A great crack appeared in the structure as a group of giant crab-like monsters dashed themselves against the walls, only to be consumed by flames and red dust. Slowly the cracks grew, until a breach was wide enough for the creatures to enter, pouring forward with shrill and terrifying screams. Smoke billowed out from within the ruined structure.
Where are we? Stuttered Thomas. What are those things?
His voice was a strained whisper of fear.
They are different aspects of ourselves, Thomas, sighed the angel. We took opposite courses of action against you, whereas we protect ourselves from you as best we can. They chose to confront you naked, allowing your fear to warp and shape them into forms most terrifying to you. They endure the torment you cause them, in the hope that you will destroy yourselves.
Thomas gazed over the rough plates of rock, thrusting out of the scene an endless causeway. The dark, grey-green ocean roared in his ears as the wind blew fiercely around him. He stared open-mouthed at the sheer ferocious beauty of it.
But how?
He managed at last. The same rocks that had sickened him previously seemed outwardly unchanged, yet now they appeared to glow, fresh beneath the pale sun. The water, once red, thick blood, was now shimmering crystal, filled with vegetation of impossible hue.
How has it changed? Breathed the angel, anticipating Thomas's disbelief.
How?
Echoed Thomas, an unstoppable grin forming on his face.
Because of you, Thomas. It is because of you.
Thomas heard himself cry out in panic, and opened his eyes, kicking out in terror. His room was dark and silent about him. He lay in his bed, soaked in sweat and breathing hard. He leaned over shakily and switched on his bedside lamp, pushing back the bed covers. The dreams were getting more and more vivid each time now. He hardly dared sleep at night, only upon finally giving in to exhaustion. Every dream was the same, always back in the field, talking to the angel. He didn't know how much more his nerves could stand. He got out of bed and poured himself a glass of water from the sink. His head pounded as he fumbled with the half-empty bottle of painkillers. Sitting down at his desk, wrapped in a blanket, Thomas stared at his bed, waiting for the morning, unable to face any more dreams.
So, Colin, what is it that's so important?
Grace was out of breath, and still straightening her clothes as she approached Commander James. He looked up anxiously from his thoughts. They were standing in a bare concrete corridor deep underground, a rusty metal door at the far end. A uniformed guard stood motionless beside it.
Grace, thank you for coming down at such short notice, muttered Colin.
He seemed preoccupied and distant.
What's wrong?
She asked with a frown.
Oh, we found something out. I thought you would want to be here. Though now I'm not so sure it was the right decision.
James turned and looked worriedly towards the door.
What are you on about?
Whispered Grace, in an attempt to sound cheerful. She had never seen the big man quite so unsure of a situation. The commander took a deep breath, looking Grace directly in the eye.
The prisoner, the one you brought back from the field. Well, we've finally been able to get round to questioning him. And only because he has been so vocal about wanting to talk.
He paused a while, as if struggling with the words.
He claims to be one of the men responsible for attacking you, here at the base.
Grace put her hand to her mouth.
He was one of the soldiers, at the concourse.
She turned pale as the memories flooded back.
He was much more than that, whispered James softly. He claims to have been involved in the conspiracy against us, right from the beginning. He says his name is Alex. I'm sorry, Grace, but I thought you would want to be here just to...
Alex,
croaked Grace in a whisper of incomprehension. Slowly a thought dawned on her, and panic seemed to spread across her face.
Alex? No, Colin, you're not saying... Not Patty's Alex. Oh God, I think I'm going to be sick.
Grace slumped against the wall at the realization, her hands pressed to her cheeks. She was as white as a ghost.
I'm so sorry, Grace, whispered Colin, his hands held out as if he wanted to console her. From what he's told us, it seems that this man was responsible for Patty and Sally Ames. Oh, God, no, no.
Grace clumsily wiped the tears from her cheeks.
He claims he was trying to get to us, to warn us of what is to come, but I can't make any sense out of it. I need your help, Grace.
She closed her eyes and took a deep breath, finally nodding forlornly.
Okay, she muttered quietly. It's okay, Colin. You did the right thing. I'm glad you let me in on this.
She stood up straight, wiping the remaining tears from her cheeks.
Just give me a few moments, and I'll be all right. Are you sure, Grace? Whispered James. You don't have to do this, you know. We could do it some other way. No, I have to do this, said Grace, her voice calm once more.
5 minutes later, the guard swung open the metal door of the interrogation room and stepped aside. With a stern expression and more than a little trepidation, Grace followed Commander James into the room. In the centre, sat behind a bare metal table, was a short, stocky man, unassuming and average. Grace looked at him in confusion. She had expected to be confronted with a monster. The man's normality shocked her. From behind the table, the prisoner looked up at Grace with piercing grey eyes.
Dr. Palmer, he whispered in surprise. I'm so sorry.
Thomas, do you have those calculations for the pressure seals on the filtration systems? Called Jim Grayson, suddenly thrusting his head through the crack in the doorway of Thomas's small office.
Sullivan jumped and slowly focused upon him. He shook his head sheepishly.
Well, light a fire under it, Thomas. I need them by tomorrow afternoon at the latest.
And with that, he was gone. Thomas jumped again as the door slammed shut with a bang. He looked down at his desk, awash with sheets of paper, books and drawings, and started to hunt around for the technical data, for the filtration system of the new suit design that Maunsworth was working on, a copy of the one they had captured. He heard voices and a clatter of feet outside. He stopped his search, holding his breath as he listened, and looked up at the row of frosted windows along one side of his office wall. Three figures walked past, laughing and joking noisily.
Hang on a minute, Thomas heard one shout,
and the group came to a halt outside his door. Thomas cringed behind his desk, straining to hear their conversation. One man leant against the frosted glass of the door, his silhouette blurred and indistinct as he peered into Thomas's room, idly waiting for his companion. They laughed and swore loudly for a second or two, before they were joined by another figure, whereupon they commenced their noisy journey into the distance. Thomas breathed a long, audible sigh of relief. He looked down at the jumble of papers, trying to remember what he had been doing, but it was no good. He had moved into his new office a week earlier, and was steadily getting less and less work done. The room seemed to be on a main thoroughfare to and from the canteen, and the constant stream of personnel was driving him crazy. The row of frosted windows along his office walls gave him vague glimpses of figures as they passed, or banged into the thin wall, or leaned against his windowsill chatting. And at every moment, Thomas expected to see the familiar, nightmarish suit of an attacker from the field. His nerves felt raw, and the more he looked, the worse the passing people seemed to be. Actions between two people having a conversation, which he would have taken for granted before, now felt loaded with violence and aggression. He watched painfully as an engineer he knew vaguely from working down on the array floor spat bile to a friend as he complained about his new work shifts. Thomas felt the wave of the man's anger as if it were a physical force cutting at him. The man stopped his swearing as a female technician walked past the two, on her way to the canteen. The frosted glass seemed to melt away, and Thomas could make out the stare of the engineer as his eyes followed her down the corridor. The lust and violence in his gaze seemed emblazoned upon the man's face, and Thomas shrank down further behind his desk in a desperate attempt to hide from his surroundings. When the two men had finally trudged off, and their raucous voices had faded into the distance, Thomas decided to make a move. If he was to get any work done, he needed to find a place free from people, which in these cramped underground surroundings he knew may prove difficult. He quickly grabbed an armful of papers and shuffled nervously to the door. He opened it gingerly and looked out. The corridor was empty. As he started off along the brightly lit corridor, A group of 5 men appeared around the corner. They wore rough, dirty overalls and hard hats, and were laughing boisterously amongst themselves. Thomas flattened himself against the wall as they approached. The men walked past without noticing him, and Thomas kept his eyes fixed on the floor. As the last man passed him, Thomas heard a high-pitched, keening noise, like the chatter of insects, and he looked up. The moment seemed to last an age, as Thomas stared in horror into a twisted, hideous face of bestial ferocity. He was too shocked to cry out as the beast surveyed him with a lazy, malicious smile, revealing uneven yellow stumps of teeth. Thomas turned and fled down the corridor, the sound of inhuman laughter at his back. Alex sighed and looked up at the impassive guards, who stood motionless behind where Grace and Commander James were seated. They had come to another painful episode in his long story.
"I was charged with conditioning a member of your team to set off an accident in the field, whilst at the same time a team was to strike from within the field, assassinating various key figures on your project. That team had already been responsible for bringing the explosives into your base, which our operative inside would set up."
"Hang on a minute," interrupted Grace, looking up from her thoughts. "You said a member of our team. You're talking about Patty, right? Don't try and gloss over her, goddammit. You murdered her, you bastard, and Sally."
A cigarette slipped through her fingers, scattering ash on the table.
"Okay, Grace, okay,"
whispered James, placing a hand on her arm.
"That was my mission,"
whispered Alex in a low croak, cradling his head in his hands.
"Sally, it didn't work, the drugs to condition her. She woke up during the process, she escaped. I only just caught her. I had to do it," he muttered.
Grace and James stared at him in horror.
I don't believe this. Why, for God's sake, why?"
Grace had stood now, and was shouting across the table at him. Alex sat up, and looked her in the eye.
"I have no excuses," he whispered.
"No excuses? Tell that to Sally, for—"
"Grace," James cut in, his hand firmly on her shoulder. "Let him speak, please." I found Patty next," said Alex painfully. "I set her to trigger the accident in the field. We found out a long time ago that if one fixated on a mental image in the field, it would cause a sort of feedback loop. Glimpses of it would feed the image in the mind, thereby making the object tangible. It always proved too dangerous to use constructively, but it was only a matter of time before Patty bit the apple."
"Now I can't listen to any more of this," spat Grace, jumping to her feet and stumbling to the door.
James found her outside, coughing and retching as she cried.
"Oh God, Colin," she sobbed. "All that suffering. How could they just keep killing?"
She sank to the floor, her knees pulled up to her chest.
"People lose sight of what they are fighting," sighed James, kneeling next to her. "Come on, Grace. I'll get the rest of the story out of him. You go and get some sleep."
That night, Grace tossed fitfully in her bed, images of Alex's piercing grey eyes haunting her dreams. Thomas sped down the corridor, rushing past vicious, ugly forms which seemed horrifically superimposed upon people he was familiar with seeing every day. Everywhere, ghoulish faces leered at him, long tongues lolled out from twisted mouths, and sharp yellow teeth glistened in the harsh lights. Thomas crashed into walls and slipped and tripped his way through the panic, his papers cast away in a frantic trail behind him. He covered his ears with his hands in a vain attempt to block out the foul, jeering voices, swearing and spitting lewd sexual references at him. He ran past a woman in a white lab coat, who scratched at her face with her fingernails, cutting bloody gouges in her cheeks, all the while laughing at her misery. Thomas turned and followed her with his eyes as he sped past her, and came sprawling to a halt as he crashed into a large, soft body.
"Well, it's the fucking tea lady,"
came a high-pitched, malicious drawl of apathy. Thomas looked up from where he had stumbled. The people around him were back to normal. The woman he had been gazing at was an attractive blonde-haired girl, her face heavily made up,
She flashed a look of disdain at Thomas and carried on down the corridor.
"Well, are you going to get us a cuppa then, eh, tea lady?"
came the voice in front of him. Thomas looked around and up at the great bulk of John Dale, the fat engineer with whom he had been forced to share a room, in a time that seemed like years ago. He stared down at Sullivan with triumphant glee, but Thomas, to his surprise, felt suddenly calm and without fear. He gazed back up at the big man. All around the grotesque body, Thomas saw strange, ethereal creatures dancing and stabbing into the man's flesh. Dale appeared completely unaware as a spindly, insect-like creature bit off a chunk of the man's stomach with its rasping jaws. Thomas stared, fascinated. There was no wound visible where the creature had fed, but strange, glowing shadows were dotted all over his body and seemed to correspond to the bite marks. Thomas smiled in awe at the spectacle. Although the creatures were gruesome in appearance, they were at the same time fascinating to look upon. They reminded Thomas of pictures he had seen of deep-sea creatures, alien, almost plant-like fronds protruding from their spiny bodies, and long fangs filling their gaping maws. They appeared eyeless and blind, and darted in and out of each other, following the contours of the heavy man. As Thomas watched astounded, one of the creatures, probably about 8 inches in length, flashed towards him, breaking away from Dale's body. Thomas felt a wave of panic hit him, and the whole collection of spectral creatures, about 30 in all, exploded into a frenzy of agitation. As the nearest creature approached Thomas, he was able to see phosphorescent markings along its long, eel-like body, and saw faint blue light emanating from points on its wide, flat head. As the creatures grew excited, they erupted into a spectacle of flashing, ghostly lights, and Thomas once more forgot to be afraid, and was instead captivated by the light show. The nearest creature paused in the air a few inches from Thomas's face, as if it had lost a scent, and he was able to get a clear view of the ephemeral creature as it slowly turned and swam lazily back to its companions. The lights dimmed, and Thomas realised that Dale was muttering something to him as he turned and shambled off down the corridor, leaving Thomas sat on the floor with an amazed grin on his face. You have been listening to The Heaven Field. For more information, downloads, and artwork, visit theheavenfield.com.